This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're glad to have you with us.
Well, I think this is the worst hurricane ever meet up in all my life.
Me and my family of seven, including an infant of 2 months, had to shelter in a closet.
Being in the middle of it, being here, it's the most horrible thing that could happen.
I am homeless.
Those voices you're hearing there are from the tiny Caribbean island of Barbuda, which took the full impact of Hurricane Irma yesterday as it swept westward across the sea. Here's the Honorable Gaston Brown, the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda, talking about the damage.
I would say that about 95% of the properties would have suffered some level of damage. They would have lost at least a part of their roofs. Some have lost whole roofs. Some properties have been totally demolished. It is absolutely heart-wrenching.
Just a brief sketch of some of the devastation in Barbuda. There was at least one death reported there, a child just 2 years old. Barbuda's sister island of Antigua was mostly spared, but other islands like the French territory of St. Martin sustained heavy damage. Irma is one of the strongest Atlantic storms on record, and it appears now headed for Florida and the mainland United States. Of course, this is all happening just days after the flooding of Hurricane Harvey, which is already testing the federal response. Later on this hour, we'll look at how ready FEMA is to deal with potential back-to-back disasters of this size. But first, let's get a look at things on the ground in one U.S. territory that's already encountered Irma. We spoke yesterday with Danica Cotto of the AP, who's in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and is watching the storm unfold. She's back with us now. Danica, what are you seeing?
Currently, the wind has completely died down. There's no rain, but we got hit pretty hard overnight. Not obviously as hard as the rest of the Northeast Caribbean, but there are a lot of trees, tree branches, and electric light poles scattered across several roads.
And what were the peak conditions overnight when the storm hit?
There were gusts on the main island of Puerto Rico up to 100 miles per hour and steady winds from 40 to 80 miles per hour. And then on the nearby island of Culebra, which is just northeast of Puerto Rico, and it's a very popular spot with tourists, there were wind gusts of up to 110 miles per hour.
And it's a little early. I realize it's just sort of next day assessment. Any sense, at least from your own eyes, of the kind of damage to property, to houses?
It seems that most structures withstood Hurricane Irma pretty well. Again, there was no direct hit. Most of the damage seems to be a lot of trees uprooted, flooding, and especially power outages. That's a big concern here. There's more than 1 million people without power, and that represents nearly 70% of customers of the island's public power company.
And when we talked yesterday, Danica Cotto, the governor of Puerto Rico, was pretty publicly concerned that citizens there weren't obeying evacuation orders, or at least that some of them weren't. How did that turn out?
It turned out well. They didn't have to force anybody to leave. The National Guard and police evacuated hundreds, if not thousands, of people. We still don't have a firm number on that. And there were more than 4,200 people and 150 pets that went to the island's 154 shelters.
Now, you talked about some of the power lines that were down, and there were reports yesterday from the utilities in Puerto Rico that power could be down for months. Some were saying 3 to 6 months. It's early, but does that look like the case?
It's too early to say. The island's public power company director has said that it could take anywhere from 4 to 6 months in certain areas. And he also said that other areas could see power restored probably within a week. He said to be patient and that today would be a critical day. So we might have, you know, more information as the day goes.
So, Danica, as we survey some of the damage on other islands around the Caribbean, Antigua and Barbuda, is there a sense in Puerto Rico that citizens there kind of dodged a bullet? I know there's plenty of damage, but other islands seem to have gotten hit really hard.
Definitely. Puerto Rico was very much spared. There's just devastation across the Northeast Caribbean. There's about 60% of people in Barbuda that are homeless. Roads, telecommunications systems have been destroyed, and the prime minister said that it might take months, possibly years, to restore. There were 8 deaths and 23 people injured in the French Caribbean island territory, so St. Martin and St. Bart's. And officials, French officials, say that they expect that number to grow. You know, again, they're just going out to assess the damage right now. And there was also one death in Barbuda. It was a 2-year-old child, and an additional death in Anguilla that has also seen extensive damage.
So it's a historic storm, especially for some of the other islands in the area. And I wonder if people in Puerto Rico, who, as we said yesterday, are used to storms every year, it's a fact of life, have a sense of the magnitude of this one.
I think they got a taste of it, nowhere near like the Northeast Caribbean. The governor originally had said that he didn't feel that there was a sense of urgency in preparing for the storm. And he said in part because people, you know, had never experienced something of this magnitude. And now, you know, we're able to see what a storm of this magnitude can cause.
Denica Cotto in San Juan with the AP assessing the impact of Hurricane Irma on Puerto Rico for us. Thank you, Denica.
Thank you very much.
Mandatory evacuation orders are in place in Florida as Irma approaches, from the Florida Keys in the south all the way to Miami and Fort Lauderdale north of that. State authorities in Florida have suspended tolls on roadways to aid in the evacuation, and now Florida is left waiting largely to see where Irma will hit. Tim Padgett is the America's editor for WLRN Public Radio in Miami. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Tim, Florida officials are, of course, watching the progress and the devastation of Irma in the Caribbean yesterday and overnight. Give us a sense of what we know from that region and what storm watchers and officials are gathering from what they see of the storm there.
Well, what they've seen so far from the eastern fringe of the Caribbean, where Irma first hit on Wednesday, I'm talking about the Leeward Islands, the British and U.S. Virgin Islands, islands like St. Martin, for example, that got especially hammered. They're seeing what this storm is truly capable of. For example, in spots like St. Martin out there, it really ravaged the island, not just with high winds and that kind of destruction, but also flooding. I mean, the most striking pictures on Wednesday were of cars submerged all over the island in floodwaters. For the bigger islands in the Caribbean, one of the fortunate factors here may be that the storm is passing to the north of them. And I'm talking about Puerto Rico, the island of Hispaniola, where the Dominican Republic and Haiti are, and Cuba. If it keeps that path across the basin, staying to the north of those islands, it could limit the devastating destruction it does through the Caribbean. The problem then is that it then runs into the southern Bahamas, and that's again where we'll be seeing it hit land and causing more devastation.
So Tim Padgett, you're there in South Florida, and I want to talk about evacuations and preparedness there. I mentioned there are evacuation orders from the Keys all the way up to Fort Lauderdale. It's a huge swath of your region. What do evacuations look like right now? What's going on the ground?
Well, in the early parts of this whole process, they're getting people with special needs, obviously, evacuated to shelters, particularly people who can't do the kind of hurricane prep that we associate with the run-up to a massive storm like this, you know, getting your shutters up, getting your water and food supplies packed away. And Wednesday night, Mayor Jimenez here in Miami-Dade County issued his first mandatory evacuation orders for what we call the zones along the South Florida coast here. Zone A, for example, are the barrier islands, the coastal areas such as Miami Beach. Those are mandatory but still voluntary evacuation orders for those areas. And I think people are taking those seriously because they realize that this storm is stronger than anything that's hit Florida in modern history.
Well, what do things look like on the big north-south highway arteries in Florida, I-75, I-95?
Well, right now, the most clogged arteries are the roads coming up from the Keys. That's where people, I think, are most concerned. That's where we thought the storm might land first. But now, as we're looking at the models, and it's looking as it's going to take this northward right-hand turn up the Florida coast on the weekend, it's looking like Miami actually, unfortunately, could be the first to get clipped. And of course, when I say clipped in regards to a massive storm like this, you're talking a devastating hit. And then we're talking about a storm that then after it clips Miami could ravage the entire Atlantic coast of Florida. And then even after that, head into Georgia and South Carolina.
Tim Padgett, talk a little bit about Miami and Miami Beach, the geography there, but also the subterranean structure of the city. There have been reports that massive flooding or a big storm of this size could really utterly devastate Miami because of the way it's built.
Well, we're already, because of global warming, we've already been dealing in the past decade with a record number of what's called king tide episodes, where even slight rainstorms can cause inordinate flooding in places like Miami Beach. And so the big concern, obviously, and why they're ordering these coastal evacuations, the big concern because of this is storm surge. It could be very significant. And after what we saw in past hurricanes with bad storm surge episodes like Katrina in New Orleans and Mississippi, for example, officials here don't want to take the risk of seeing people caught in that kind of storm surge, particularly since we've seen Miami and Miami Beach have become so vulnerable to it.
Now, of course, Miami Beach is famous for high rises. It's famous for a lot of luxury hotels and condos. But Tim Padgett, at WLRN there, you all have been doing a lot of reporting with Miami residents who live in places that aren't 100 feet above a flood. Let's listen to some sound provided by your station of some Miami residents who might not have such an easy time evacuating.
I went to the store and, you know, got me a couple of loaf of bread and brought me some batteries from a flashlight. And that was all I can afford right now.
Let's think about this, right? You already don't have a car. So you finally go to the store, which is not up to par in your community, and they don't have any more things. The reality of the fact of being able to go to another store, which would probably be miles away, is almost unrealistic.
Tim Padgett, those are a couple of Miami residents that talked to your reporters at WLRN about the realities of evacuation and preparedness for them. What are you finding?
Right. That's reporting from our WLRN reporter, Nadege Green, here. And one of Nadege's keen insights in this report is that Miami increasingly is a high rent, low wage metropolis. And when disasters like this approach us, there are increasingly large swaths of the population that can't afford to do the kind of prep you need to do before a weather event like this. So you do have a large cohort here in Miami that really can't hunker down, as they would say, because they just don't have the means to do so. I think, you know, the local and state governments will do what they can to try to get transportation into those neighborhoods. But again, it's going to be very difficult.
Tim Padgett, we're going to let you go, but I want to ask you about the federal response here. We're going to be talking about FEMA and its response in multiple disasters at the end of the hour. Is FEMA on the ground in Miami and in South Florida now?
Well, we're seeing it arrive, and obviously it's tough for that agency because they've been so preoccupied already with the flooding in Houston and Texas. And so we are seeing that state agency get on the ground, but I think people here understand that it may not be as timely as we would have liked because they're already dealing with something across the Gulf.
Tim Padgett, America's editor for WLRN Public Radio in Miami. Tim, thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.